How can we make the world better? By making ourselves better. The Dr. Joe Show explores how you can make positive personal change by using his groundbreaking and highly effective I Am approach to understand who we are and why we do what we do. Your small changes can have big effects.
Join us now for the Dr. Joe Show with Mark Stiles of Stiles Law and your host, Dr. Joe Schrand.
Tonight's guest is a world-renowned author, counselor, lecturer, and philosopher. Our guest uses ancient wisdom and modern wit as he captivates audiences around the country and the world. He's widely recognized for his thoughtful approach to almost every major issue that plagues society, from self-awareness to spirituality, mysticism, sexuality, parenting, and marriage. Evidence of his regard is displayed throughout thousands of students, fans, and individuals who have a deep respect for his knowledge, wisdom, and compassion. When he takes the podium, our guest enthuses each of his listeners with a sense of purpose and definite direction. He has written 5 books with more on the way. The latest is entitled Creating a Life That Matters: How to Live and Love with Meaning and Purpose. He has been featured on CNN, PBS, BBC, A&E, TEDx, just to name a few. He's also the most popular rabbi on YouTube with over 470 followers, including yours truly.
470,000?
470,000 subscribed followers on YouTube.
Okay.
Including me, Dr. Joe.
Including you, Mark Stiles.
Without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, please meet Rabbi Manus Friedman. Welcome to the Dr. Joe Show, sir.
Thank you. Thank you for the invitation.
All right. It is wonderful to have you here, Rabbi. Thank you so much. So we were in touch through email, and I asked you through email, you know, what do you think we should talk about? And folks, I just want you to hear what the rabbi responded. The makeup of the soul, the solution to the world's psychological problems, how the Torah is relevant to every person's well-being, and this is very kind, and whatever else you want to discuss. Plus, the book, Creating a Life That Matters, How to Live in Love with Meaning and Purpose. Let's start right there. This is your 5th book?
It's one of the 5. I'm not sure exactly which order they arrived in. And it's kind of a manual for life. Now, it's one thing to have a book on a subject, which may be a very good book on that subject, but then you got to study other subjects, and they don't always match. They're not always in sync. So to have one theme, hopefully, running through all the parts of life, so whether it's marriage or raising children or belief, life and death, one theme, so that there's a consistent thread through all parts of your life, creating a harmony in those parts. So you're not going off in different directions with each segment of your life. So your social life is consistent with your personal life, and your personal life is consistent with your social life, and so on. So it's kind of a manual that touches on all the important issues in life. So it's not necessarily a book about relationships. It's not necessarily a book about faith. It's not necessarily a book about children. It's creating a life which includes all of the above, and they have to have a harmonizing unity among them to keep you sane. Can't be a different person in different circumstances.
So basically, how do you do that? I mean, because when you go to work, some people in the social domain of work, they act differently than when they go home. I mean, ideally, we all act with kindness and honesty wherever we are. But how do you do this consistent thread?
Yeah. I think the most shocking disharmony is when you know a man at work and he's the most delightful guy in the office. But when you find out how he behaves at home, you're completely shocked. It's not the same human being. In the office, he's a really nice, friendly, considerate guy. At home, he's a total monster. So aside from the question of how could you be such a monster, it's like, how can you be so different? Mm-hmm. Like you throw a switch when you walk in the door and you're a different person.
Yeah.
And why?
Yes. And how? Yeah. How do you pull that off? I mean, who are you really?
So that's the road of exploration, right? Can if somebody can explore that, like why they're inconsistent, they can then make a decision. They can either be wonderful at work and home or the opposite, I suppose. So what's the exploration? What's the journey?
They say, if you're a monster, at least look like one.
Right. Yeah, they say that to me about, you know, if you're a doctor, at least look like one. But we're trying, right? So very, and how does this connect then with purpose?
Okay, so the whole notion of purpose, which is such a powerful, like, powerful theme, the fact that we look for purpose is actually the best proof that there is a purposeful God.
Yes.
Why would everyone, for all of known history, be looking for purpose if purpose didn't exist?
Well, I'm sorry, if purpose did not exist?
Right.
Huh. Go on.
If there is no purpose, why are we all looking for it?
Mm.
If you never had a home, how could you be homesick? You're missing your purpose. Well, there is no purpose. No, there has to be. Why? Why are we so sure that there is a purpose that we keep looking for it?
Interesting. And, you know, for me, it stirs up a whole bunch of potential answers. Mark, what do you think about this?
It's fascinating. I've never actually thought about it in that way. But yet I'm seeking, I'm discovering, I'm searching for that purpose. And it seems to always come back to the service of others.
Which is the answer to the question, what is my purpose? But where does the question come from?
Right.
Where does that quest, that need, that compulsion?
So I think it's a great question. So just to give you a little background on me, when I was in college, I was doing a lot of theater, but I was also studying something called sociobiology. It had just come out. E.O. Wilson had written this sort of revolutionary textbook looking at, in essence, the genetics of behavior. But the idea was that everything we do has some meaning. And Alan Watts was a philosopher I was reading at the same time who made the distinction between meaning and purpose. But for me, over, because let me back up. Rabbi, when did you start thinking about this? Did you start thinking about this when you were in your 20s, in your 30s? I mean, what was the evolution towards this wonderful idea that there is no purpose? How did that come about?
Well, that there must be a purpose.
Or that there must be a purpose.
Well, we were studying Hasidic philosophy when we were teenagers. Mm. And these are the topics. This is what we were wrestling with when we were 17. So it's been a few years.
That's wonderful. And so I think we all seek the same thing, which is to feel valuable. We need to feel valuable. And I think that there's a huge sort of evolutionary premium to that. And evolution does not negate, you know, anything. I mean, God is part of this. We are part of God. I mean, this doesn't mean that there's no God. I firmly believe in God. But millions of years ago, we were not these sort of thinking beings. We were beginning to think, but we needed to survive. And I think that that's why we have to have value. Because when you have value, you're contributing. When you're contributing, you can be part of a group. So
we could also assume the opposite.
Okay.
Life was so simple back then. Give me something to eat and I'm fine. What else do I need? The real issues were, why am I? Like when life was new, we didn't know that. Now we've gotten used to it. You know, we've been around for a while. Mm-hmm. So why are we here? What's the difference? We've been here a long time. Settle down, you know? But back then, the question of why, who created us, must have been much more urgent than today.
Mm.
So here's the you know, Karl Marx was supposed to have said that religion or faith is the opiate of the masses.
Yeah.
He was answering the question, why is everyone looking for a purpose? Why? Because you're frightened, because you're insecure, because you feel insignificant. So to make yourself feel better, you invent this idea of a divine being who is going to punish you. Wait, that didn't make any sense.
punish you if you don't do the right thing.
Right, which is just another anxiety. So, see, the whole notion sounds good at first, but it doesn't hold water at all. If I am desperate for a support, I will not cling to a straw because it won't hold me up. If I need a crutch, I need a crutch that is a little stronger than my weak legs. I'm not going to lean on a straw for very long. So the fact that the crutch actually helps keep me up means that the crutch is substantial. So if we are truly desperate for some meaning, why would we settle for a fantasy that has no meaning? But so if it didn't work, you don't keep going to the same doctor who doesn't cure you.
But you know, when it comes to straws and crutches, let me just say that I do have some crutches for which I'm very grateful, and those are our sponsors, because without our sponsors, we would be like a straw and we would collapse.
That is smooth.
So let me take a commercial break and hear from our crutch. We'll be right back with Rabbi Manus Friedman.
Hey, folks. Thank you for listening to the Dr. Joe Show. We've been investigating whether or not we want to bring sponsors into our podcast. What are your thoughts? Do you know somebody who might be a good partner with the Dr. Joe Show, who may want to align their product or service with the Dr. Joe Show? Think about it. And we're back with the Dr. Joe Show with our guest, world-renowned author, lecturer, philosopher, and counselor, Rabbi Manus Friedman.
Yeah. Thank you so much for being here. We were off air, and Mark, you brought some stuff up off air a bit. Maybe we can bring that in, because I think it's...
Well, I was really impressed with the YouTube presence. I know you have a lot of subscribers, me being one of them now. But the content that was delivered is really, really good. So listener, right now, while you're at it, pick up the phone, grab the YouTube, find Rabbi Manus Friedman's YouTube and hit that subscribe button. It is worth it. You will not regret it. The information is thoughtful, concise, really thought-provoking. And as you mentioned, Rabbi, it comes from teachings of hundreds of years ago, yet so relevant today.
And this is actually how it started. I was studying or having these conversations with some of the younger students here in Brooklyn, and we taped it so that they could hear it again. And then somehow it got onto a website, and the reaction was so strong, we thought, okay, if everybody wants to hear it, then let's make it public. And that's it. It just took off.
I love that.
The content. I mean, so what was in that first couple of tapes? What were you talking about? You remember?
Oh, I don't remember. Must have been something about purpose.
Yeah.
It comes up often.
So you would say that these were the conversations that you're having around the table when you were 16, 17 years old. How do you think that has progressed? I mean, I was asking before about the progression of this, because did it have the same sort of impact when you were 17? The idea that there's maybe no purpose?
No. The thought is that if everyone is looking for a purpose, then there's no question that there is one. We're not all suffering from some universal delusion.
Okay.
And if there is a purpose, then the purpose has to precede our existence. Nobody creates a car and then ponders its purpose.
So let me go over that again. Let me get some clarity on that. So purpose had to precede existence of being aware that maybe there's a purpose.
Of our existence. And we say, do I exist for a purpose? Well, then I can't make one up halfway through life. I can wake up one morning and say, my purpose is to be a doctor.
But then my mother said that. She said, Joe, you can be whatever you want as long as it's a doctor.
Right. But then imagine I try to get through medical school and I can't make it. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll find a different purpose. No, that's not purpose. That's just intention.
Career,
plan.
Yeah.
And purpose means I exist out of some purpose. There was a purpose for my existence, so here I am, which means that purpose is in my DNA.
Do you believe we all have the same purpose?
if we're all human beings, we must have some purpose in common.
Agreed.
Then there are distinctions, men, women, Jews, non-Jews, doctors, non-doctors.
Rabbis, non-rabbis, lawyers, non-lawyers. We got Mark as a lawyer, so true.
Yeah,
we're in these little clusters.
Here's the real pivotal revolutionary idea. For 5,000 years, we've been told that to stay alive, you must have certain basic requirements. You have to have safety. You have to have food. You have to have drink. You have to have
the ability to
friendship.
Mate. Right. Relationships. Right.
Relationships. In other words, we are very needy because without these things provided, we cannot live. So what motivated everything human beings ever did? Don't want to die.
Mm-hmm.
Don't want to die.
Yep.
It's a powerful motivation.
Yep.
So back then, the farmer wakes his son early in the morning and says, get up, we got to go to work. The boy says, why? He says, because it's the season. If we don't get the seeds in, the winter is going to come and we won't have what to eat and we're going to die. Mm-hmm. So of course, the kid gets up. Say that to a child today. Wake up, it's late. Late for what? You're going to miss the bus. Why do I need a bus? To get you to school. Why do I need to go to school? I mean, you go through this whole thing. Well, because you got to get into a high school. High school will get you into college. College will get you a job. Job will get you money. Money will help you pay the mortgage. Why do I need a mortgage? Well, because you got to live in a house. Why do I have to live in a house? Well, if you live in the streets, it's dangerous. You could die. And the kid says, that's why I have to wake up this morning and get on a bus. Because 60 years from now, I might be in the streets and die. I'm going back to sleep. And besides, you don't die, you go on welfare.
Yeah.
So the threat of death, and I think this is really a major, now never mind climate change, there's a change in mentality that is, death doesn't work anymore. Threatening people that they're going to die just doesn't have the clout it used to have.
Why do you think that is? I agree with you. Why? How did that generation, people 30, 40, 50 years younger than us, how did they get to that part? Is it the video games?
No, that's a jaded, callous attitude.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm talking about healthy, well-balanced, intelligent kids who say, I didn't ask to be born. I don't need this.
Right.
They're not depressed. They're not angry, but they're intelligent.
Yes.
So you say to a teenager, don't experiment with drugs. It'll kill you. And they're waiting for the punchline. And so, and we're having a hard time relating to that. Well, what do you mean? You might die. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. The same is true with religion. If you don't behave yourself, you're going to suffer in the hereafter. It's not working.
Right.
Makes no impression whatsoever. Now, here's the wisdom behind it. It makes no sense to live my life so that I don't die. Live, otherwise you won't live. This is not making any sense. Go through all that work, put up with all the difficulties, with all the heartaches, with all the anxieties, because otherwise you won't be alive. See, you're not explaining anything. You're running in circles.
Mm-hmm.
Don't die because then you won't be alive.
And I'm not enjoying what I'm doing while I'm alive. So the alternative isn't that scary.
Right. So when you're not enjoying, you're in danger. But even when you are enjoying, it's an option. As long as life is good, I'll put up with it. I don't need it. I don't need it.
Wow.
This little insight is so revolutionary. Yes, I'm alive. And no, I don't want to die. But I don't need this. And if I don't need to live, I certainly don't need money. I certainly don't need love. I don't need to be here at all. So all the little goodies of life, I don't need any of them. This is so liberating because it's so true. Human beings don't need to be here. We don't ask to be born. So these people who are suing their parents for giving birth to them without their consent, it's not a joke anymore. It's real. Why do I have to do anything when I didn't ask to be born? I didn't agree to be born. You went ahead and gave birth to me, so you pay the bills. Why should I? You invited me to an expensive restaurant, and then you want me to pay the bill? That's nasty. So I have to go to college, I've got to get a degree, and I have to pay the bills? It doesn't make sense.
Or dollars.
Right. So even with God, God says, do this or you will die. And the reaction is, you created me. I don't need this. If I die, your loss, not mine. So look at how we're turning everything upside down. The going assumption for all of known history is that we are the needy ones. God is sitting in heaven laughing his head off, watching us struggle, because he needs nothing, obviously, because he's perfect. Yeah. Once you think about this, it's the exact opposite. It doesn't make sense that we are needy, and it certainly doesn't make sense that God needs nothing. I don't know how we even got into that mindset. He created the entire universe and needs nothing. When you need nothing, you do nothing.
Well,
and we didn't create anything, but we have a long list of needs.
Right.
This doesn't make sense.
It is difficult as human beings to be this needy.
It is.
I'm not sure I really asked for it, but I do have needs, and I've been asking them, my sponsors, to please just keep our crutches going so we can have these wonderful discussions. We'll be right back with the Dr. Joe Show and Rabbi Manes Friedman.
Hey, folks, welcome back. So any thoughts? Do you listen to other podcasts? Do you see how they do the sponsors? Is there a way that they're utilizing sponsors that you enjoy or you don't enjoy? I listen to SmartList, and I really enjoy how the co-hosts share the voiceover for the product or service. It's really funny for the most part, but it's unique. It's them really endorsing. Does that work? What do you think? And we're back with the Dr. Joe Show. Sit down, get comfortable, because we are going deep with Rabbi Manes Friedman.
Yeah. And we were talking about needs and how we haven't created anything, and yet we're so needy. I'm sure there, but I'm not sure we created you. So where do we go with this? What do? We are needy.
See, the good news is that not only don't we want to be needy, we are in fact not needy. So when we feel a need, it feels unnatural and it's disturbing. Because naturally we have no needs. I want to give you some spiritual insight. What is a prophet? How does a human being experience prophecy? The idea is that there is a place within all of us that is absolutely at rest, peaceful, and quiet. When you probe into a human psyche, you discover all sorts of nasty, chaotic things going on beneath the surface. But don't stop there. Go a little further than that. Go a little deeper than that, and you come to a place that is completely quiet. There are no needs. There are no discomforts. There's no conflict. It's just perfectly utopian. It's quiet. It's okay. Everything is fine. The noise starts when things get complicated. But in our core, there is no complication. There's no conflict whatsoever. In that place, in our quiet place, this is where we can hear God's voice. Actually, this is where we can hear anyone other than ourselves. So the prophet is someone who is not distracted by the noisy part of his personality, psyche, or whatever. He is often in that quiet place, and he will hear some divine message or some divine voice. And this is where we can actually connect to each other. The noisy part cannot connect to another noisy part. It's just misery. But my quiet place can get very comfortable with your quiet place. And in that place, I can actually see you as you are. The noise discolors everything. So in that quiet place, I don't have needs. The needs come on afterwards, externally imposed. So here, for example, I need to eat. No, you don't. It's plagiarism. You don't need to eat, because if it were up to you, you would never make yourself dependent on broccoli. you would never put yourself in a position where you have to get to the vegetable before the rabbit does. You're competing with bugs, with insects. I would never do this to myself. So to say I need to eat, no, I need to stop eating. I need to stop being dependent on things outside of me so that I can go without food when I'm busy and without sleep. So really the question is, who did this to me? I don't like this. So to call it my need, oh, I don't need this. And yet I can't go without it. Conclusion, whoever designed me needs me to eat. It's not my idea, not my picture of what I would like to think of myself as. Oh, no. I am not a food needy being. That's not me. I can't help it. I must eat because there's a flaw in my design. And I didn't design myself this way. And a perfect example for that is a teenage boy is traveling overseas. He comes to the school, to the yeshiva on the other side of the ocean, walks into the office and says to the dean, I need to call my mother. Can I use the phone? The dean says, you need? He says, I need to call my mother. The dean says, you need? The boy says, no, my mother needs me to call her. And the dean says, stop lying. You don't need to call your mother unless you ran out of money. Your mother needs you to call. Why do you plagiarize? I don't need to eat. Whatever created me, whoever created me, for some strange reason, makes me dependent on food. I don't understand this. I don't like this. The creator needs me to eat. Saying I need to eat is dishonest. It's confusing. It makes us crazy. I don't need to eat, especially when I'm busy doing something really meaningful. So I don't need to sleep. I don't need to eat. I don't need a house. I don't need to be loved. I don't need to be protected. I don't even need to be here. And yet I am here and I must eat. Well, who did this to me? Now we're talking purpose. Whoever designed me this way had a purpose. Now purpose is starting to become concrete. If I was designed this way, there must be a purpose. So the only need I have is to find out what that purpose is. Or the only need I have is to know who needs me, because I don't need this. So it boils down to a very simple formula. The choice in life is, do you want to be needy or do you want to be needed? That's it.
Agreed. But I'm curious. Again, I can't help it. It's the shrink in me. I start hearing these other things, Rabbi. So if we are angry that the Creator made us have to eat? Does that make us angry? Because anger is an emotion designed to change things. So do we get angry that all these things that I need, which I don't really need, because when I'm in that inner place, I'm probably connected more to God because that's that inner peace. So do we have to be angry that we've got all these things that we must do to survive?
It's a subtle distinction here. Mm-hmm. I'm not angry that I can't go without food.
Okay.
I'm angry if I think that's my need.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, because it puts me at a very uncomfortable, weak position, the beggar at the door. And secondly, because it doesn't feel natural.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make sense that I need this when I don't need this. So I'm not angry that I must eat, but I do get angry if I'm laboring under the misconception that I need to eat.
And then if we step back from it and say, well, even though there are all these things that I don't really need, but I have to do anyway to survive, but I don't really need them, is having that purpose in this case sort of, is it a rationalization in psychiatric terms, right? To say, well, there must be a reason why all this stuff is happening. Because I'm a firm believer everything happens for a reason. So is that our mindset now as we're trying to figure out why would God create us in such a way that we need to do all these things that we don't really need?
Well, here's the question, I think, in an enlarged version. We want things to make sense.
Yeah.
Is that a pathology?
It is a defense against feeling powerless. Because being powerless once you're powerless, you're dead. So I don't think there is any pathology. I think this is there is no pathology. We're all doing the best we can. I really believe that. And that's why this is so important, because how do we come to terms with the universe, the world that we have right now? Well, what's the purpose?
A human being is an intelligent creature. Is intelligence a defense mechanism?
Yeah.
Or is intelligence intelligence?
Yeah.
One of the symptoms of intelligence is that things need to make sense. That's certainly not pathological. That doesn't come from weakness. It comes from intelligence. And we are naturally intelligent. We're not trying to make up for something. So unless you go the evolution route, where we developed intelligence in order to out-survive the monkeys or something. No. Intelligence is a reality. Like minerals are minerals, humans are intelligent. And one of the symptoms of intelligence is we need everything to make sense, because we're intelligent, not because we're frightened.
Mm.
You know, being frightened does not lead you to the conclusion that E equals MC squared.
True. Very true.
You don't need to know that to survive.
Mm.
So here's the thing. It is unnatural to feel needy because we didn't create ourselves. Yes, we're created with handicaps, but don't blame that on me. So now, when we're told that we have needs, and the needs keep piling on more and more and more, all the commercials, you don't have one of these? You need one of these. Then you go into psychology and you find out more needs that you never even thought of. And then you turn to religion for a little relief, and you find out that your needs will continue after you die. So you got nothing to look forward to.
Well, I really think that this is powerful. There are very few things that we can look forward to, but one of the things that I absolutely do look forward to is hearing from our sponsors, even if it is commercial and even if it is saying you need this, sometimes they're right. So let's listen to our sponsors. They have a purpose. We do. We'll be right back with the Dr. Joe Show.
Hey, welcome back. And again, we're super grateful for you listening to the Dr. Joe Show. If you have anyone that you think might be a good sponsor, shoot us an email at drjoepodcast@gmail.com. drjoepodcast@gmail.com. Give us your thoughts about the show, too. We're wondering, are we talking to the trees, or are people really gaining value in this? Please let us know. Thank you again, and enjoy the rest of the show. And we're back with the Dr. Joe Show with Rabbi Manus Friedman talking about purpose.
Yeah.
Purpose.
You know,
here's a practical application.
Great.
Of this whole theory. This boy attempts suicide. He ends up in the hospital for observation. Mother can't visit him because it's a restricted area. Only ones allowed are clergy. So she asks me to visit her son. I go up there to this half prison, half hospital. And I really feel bad for a 14-year-old boy among these maniacs. And I walk into his room. They're screaming. They're howling like banshees. He doesn't notice. He's not afraid. He's reading something, and he doesn't even look up. I try to make conversation. He's not interested. I try and try. Your mother wants. She's worried. He does not look up. Finally, he says, "Why don't you go home? The chaplain has already been here." I said, "What did the chaplain say?" He says, "Something stupid." I said, "What did the chaplain say that was stupid?" "Chaplain said I shouldn't kill myself because God loves me." I said, "That's stupid?" He says, "Yeah." We spoke about it a little bit. He couldn't really explain, like a typical teenager. He couldn't explain why he thought it was stupid. It was just stupid. I went home and I realized that I had just discovered something really, really significant. The kid comes from a more or less stable family. No real reason for him to take his life, other than boredom. By trying to take his life, he was announcing to the world, "I don't have to be here. There's no really need for me to be here. So 14 years, enough. Let's try something else." He was saying, "I am not necessary." Now the chaplain comes and says, "Oh, don't kill yourself. God loves you." What the boy is thinking I just told you I wasn't necessary, but I should hang around because God loves me. That may work for a pet, for a gerbil that nobody needs, but they're cute and fluffy, so we love them. But to tell a human being, you're right, you're not necessary, but God loves you, doesn't work. The discovery I made that day was, we much prefer to be needed than to be loved. If I'm not necessary, no amount of love is going to make up for it. Because at our very core, we are purpose-driven creatures, not lovesick creatures. So love has actually become the poison that is killing us. We're told that love controls everything. Every problem is because not enough love. Every frustration in a teenager, because you don't love him enough. Oh, but I love him a lot. No, not enough. You're making people crazy with this love. You get married for love and then say it's unconditional? You just made the biggest condition of them all. Love me or we have no relationship. That's not even a relationship. That's an emotional fling. So love has become an idol, a false god, and it is ruining marriages. It is ruining families. It's destroying the fabric of society. We don't really notice that we need to be needed. It's a frustration that we can't put our finger on because I'm in love. My parents love me. Why isn't that enough? Why am I frustrated? Because love does not work as a substitute for being necessary.
I agree. And that's why, you know, what the IM is saying is that we all want the same thing, which is to feel valued by someone else. And I think value is not the same as love, not at all. I think we want to be valued. And the way we get there is respect. Respect leads to value, and value leads to trust. And we all want the same thing, feel valued.
Do you see value and needed as the same thing, Dr. Joe?
I think that being valued perhaps fulfills the desire to be needed. But again, it gets back to purpose. I mean, we have so much opportunity to help other people. And every time you remind someone of their value, you increase your own value. And that, I think that's purpose too.
Rabbi, to be valuable means to be needed.
Yes, I agree. Absolutely. Absolutely agree.
But now look at what this does to religion. Religion tells you God loves you. He loves you. He's all about love. He is love. God is love. Does he need you? No.
Does he value you?
No.
And that's why we feel.
He loves you. He loves you very, very much. But if you don't believe in him and you reject him, well, then you just go to hell forever.
Right. No.
No cost to him.
Right.
Which means he does not need you. The conclusion is, if he doesn't need you, then he does not love you either. Because there is no love without vulnerability.
Great.
So religion has been selling an empty promise.
Yep.
Don't promise me God loves me unless I am essential in some way to him in his vast eternal plan. If I'm not necessary, please don't love me. Don't treat me like a pet.
There's a lot there.
Wow.
But Rabbi, we're coming to the end of the show, but we're going to have so much more to talk about. But the I Am has two truths. Because the four domains, your home domain, your social domain, the biological and the I see, the way I see myself, the way I think other people see me, because these intersect, a small change in any domain can have a big effect. We don't need to change everything. So with that in mind, what small change can you recommend to our listeners based on what we're talking about tonight?
There is a change. I don't know if you can call it small, but there is one change that will make a huge difference in every aspect of life, in all four domains. And that is the simple equation. My life is not for me. Just because it's my life doesn't mean it's for me. A perfect example is, imagine you're worth $200 billion. Do you think it's all for you? Mm-hmm. If it is, you got a problem. You better start spending fast because in 10 lifetimes, you could not use up that money. How could it possibly be for you? So the very rich feel a need to give away because it just doesn't feel like it's mine. Mm. It can't be there for me. So imagine a guy is worth $200 billion and he keeps it all under his mattress. And you say, what are you doing with all that money? He says, it's mine. I say, I know it's yours. What are you doing with it? Well, it's mine, so I'm keeping it. I have a lot of love. So what are you doing with it? I'm loving myself. I'm a very good communicator. Yeah, so who do you talk to? Oh, I talk to myself. They'll take you away. Everything I have, which is mine, is not meant for me.
So let me just say, Rabbi, I think this takes us to the second truth of the I am. The second truth of the I am is you control no one, but you influence everyone. You get to choose the kind of influence you want to be. Rabbi Manus Friedman, author, philosopher, what kind of influence do you want to be?
Well, that comes in layers.
Mm-hmm.
Layer number one, I'd like to get people to think clearly. People have stopped thinking. We take sides, we are reactionary, and we refuse to think about it. It's my opinion, and that's it. Well, why do you think that? It's what I think. Actually, you haven't thought much.
Mm.
It's a terrible condition. We have given up on logic. We've given up on sense because it never got us anywhere.
Mm.
Because most of the subjects we study, all of our educational life, high school, grade school, college, irrelevant, irrelevant. What I need to know, they don't teach me. And whatever they teach me, I don't need to know. It's so frustrating. And so logic, education, studying, reading, nobody expects it to bring any benefits. So who cares? Just pick a side, find the flavor you love and indulge. What else is there? It's sad and it's dangerous. So that would be the first layer. Think. The second layer is truth. Completely given up on truth. You know, like I say to someone, why can't we just tell the world that we are the chosen people? We are the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And we were there at Mount Sinai, and we heard God state the Ten Commandments, and we traveled in the desert for 40 years. Why can't we just tell the world? Why do we keep them guessing? Are you? Aren't you? Yes, yes, we are. We are the chosen people. And so many leaders that I talk to about this say, look, we know that's true. We believe that's true. But nobody else is going to believe it. Okay, let's go with that theory. No one else is going to believe it. So we do what instead? This is terrible. So instead of telling the truth, let's just come up with a good lie. Are you serious? This is what life has come down to? No one believes in the truth, so it's useless. Let's come up with a better lie. This is the end of civilization. If you don't believe in the power of truth, then nothing matters anymore. Good guy, bad guy, right, wrong, nothing matters anymore. Stop the world. I want to get off. So my first desire, wish, is to get people thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And the second is to bring back respect for the simple truth.
I agree. I think that we're in a really scary, dangerous time right now. I think we have developed a prefrontal cortex, right? The ability to think, the ability to explore, the ability to solve problems, the ability to, you know, anticipate what will happen next. It's right here. It's the most evolved part of our brain. But we are still these limbic, impulsive, irrational animals. It's not a good thing or bad thing. It's an I am, right? This is the I am. Nothing's broken. We are at a current maximum potential. I'm doing the best I can at this moment with the potential to change in the very next seconds to another best I can. Nothing is broken. We're responding to these domains. But if we keep doing what we're doing, we will destroy ourselves. You know?
So we are doing something unnatural or unhealthy. What is it?
But the thing is, it's still an I am.
It's the toxin.
But you see, if I can step back, you see, my concern is if I say to someone, I think you're doing something unhealthy, I will create a resistance. I will create a wall because they will immediately think I see them as less valuable. That's the I see domain. How do you see me? The I am is saying, let's look again at why we're doing what we're doing based on the influence of the domains without the judgment. You take the words look again, reverse them. Again, look. Again, to repeat something. Look like a spectator. Let's respect why people do what they do without that judgment. When is the last time you got angry at someone treating you with respect? I mean, we don't. Our brains don't activate that defense because we feel respected, which helps us feel valuable, which is what everybody wants. For millennia, human beings have increased their value by decreasing someone else's. And then we're astonished that other person, that other group, that other country does the same. That's why we have the conflicts we have today. Mm-hmm. But at any moment, you can remind someone of their value.
Yes.
And when you do that, you increase your own value. That's what leads to trust. And with trust, we can find truth.
Yes. That's a very good method. You build trust, people will hear you.
Yes.
And when they hear you, you can tell them that they're stupid. Not that they are stupid, but they're being stupid.
Yeah.
Stop it. You're more intelligent than that. Why are you acting so ridiculous?
Yeah.
But you got to say, something is ridiculous. Something, not you.
Right.
Like, what are you on that makes you act this way?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What toxin have you swallowed that's poisoning your system? Because it's not you. It's poison.
Right. But again, that's the small change, mm-hmm. right? I never said you were going to win and be successful. The I am doesn't say that,
right?
You know, for some people, success is when you love going to work and love going home. That's success. But for some, success is having food in the refrigerator or having a home to have a refrigerator or just waking up. So what I explain to patients is when I add a medicine, all I'm doing is making a small change in the biological domain. Nothing is broken. I change the environment of the cells. I change the response. So what happened in your home or social domain, your biological IC, that the best you can do right now is see something so different than what I see and believe something so different than what I believe. I'm fascinated by that. I want to know why, what happened. And what I'm hoping is that it creates a platform where people can truly explore who we are, why we do what we do. I mean, I think we had this discussion tonight about our need, you know, and I absolutely agree. But we need to feel valued. And if I can do that for you, then that's my purpose, to help you feel valued, to remind you that you're valuable. And then hopefully you'll do the same for somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Now, in ultimate truth, are you valuable?
No. I mean, I'm a little more valuable now than I was when I was in college and pre-med, but that's a different kind of value. I don't know. Rabbi, I honestly don't know. Mark knows. I don't know. I don't know why, you know, whether any of this has any meaning or purpose or whether it's...
So this is where God becomes indispensable.
Mm-hmm.
It's one thing to say, let me make you healthy. Let me make you feel secure, so that you can get to know the truth. What is the truth? Nobody has found it yet. There's a joke, the guy says, I live in a very dangerous neighborhood. I asked the policeman, how long does it take to walk from here to the subway station? He says, I don't know. No one has ever made it. Like, we're all looking for the truth. And if I help you and I value you and I make you feel safe and secure, then you can pursue the truth. And what will I find? Nobody knows. That's frustrating. How hard am I going to try to find something that no one ever has found? That's why when we say the purpose of life, we mean the purpose. There is a known purpose, but only God can provide that.
Mm.
What is the purpose? The whole complete story? God wants to be the God of earth, not the God of heaven.
Mm.
In order to be the God of earth, he has to be invited by earthy people. So we are partnering with God to make earth his main dwelling place. That is the truth.
Amen.
The Bible's message. The Bible never told you how to get to heaven.
Told you how to bring God to earth. Wow.
I've read the Bible from cover to cover. There is no mention of heaven after the first sentence.
Mm.
In the beginning, God created heaven and earth. The rest is all about earth.
Yeah.
So if you want to get to heaven, well, good for you. You're going to miss God because God is coming down. You can wave as you pass each other. Going to heaven is a terrible idea.
So how do we do that? How How do we behave in a way that creates that invitation?
God did not keep it a mystery. He came down to Mount Sinai and was very explicit.
Well, the Ten Commandments.
Actually, seven commandments.
Oh, really? Oh,
Ten are for the Jewish people.
Oh.
You know, the Ten Commandments begin, I am God, your God, who took you out of Egypt. Well, who came out of Egypt?
Yeah.
Not the Egyptians.
Yeah.
So the Ten Commandments are really addressed to the Jewish people. But there are seven commandments that were given to Noah before there was a Jew. Some of them match, you know, are the same. Like, don't murder, don't commit adultery, don't steal. But then there's, in the Ten Commandments, honor your father and mother. It's not one of the seven. Keep the Sabbath, not one of the seven. One of the seven is don't be cruel to animals. It's not one of the ten.
Yeah.
So all human beings have seven commandments. If they keep the seven commandments, they are righteous. If you're not keeping the seven commandments, keep them. You haven't done it till now. Well, do it now.
Never too late.
Never too late. Because they're what God needs. So a person, well, it's too late for me. It's not about you. You don't need to eat. You don't need to go to heaven. So all the commandments are there to partner with God in making the world more godly. So if you didn't do it yesterday, well, then do it today. Will that get you to heaven? You're not going to heaven. Much better to stay here. So that is the main theme. Life is not for me. I'm just the messenger to spread it, to share it, to give it, whatever I have. If I have information, not for me to keep, that's sinful. If I have love, not to love myself. If I have respect, it's not to respect myself. That's narcissism. That's like a dark star, sucks in its own light. I think if children were told, your life is not for you. Someone needs what you have, beginning with God. I think we would have a much nicer world.
Yeah.
Just on that one concept.
Yeah. Well, it seems that, you know, your sons are helping you and spreading the word. I think that's fantastic. I have four kids, and I think each of them, the core is they're kind. You know, one of the things that I say to parents is, it is much more rewarding to be amazed at who your child is than disappointed in who they are not. You know?
Okay, let's end with one more piece of lyrical advice.
Great.
If you raise your children, then you can spoil your grandchildren. But if you spoil your children, you're going to have to raise your grandchildren.
Oh, nice.
And you're too old for that.
Nice.
So true.
So true, right?
So true.
It is so true.
Much, much more to explore. Rabbi, this has been wonderful. Thank you so much for the beginning of a conversation that really has so much more to explore. Hopefully, we'll be able to do that. Thank you so much for being here. Good night, folks. Mark?
Folks, if you're seeking more, as I am, go onto the YouTube channel for Rabbi Manus Friedman and dig in deep, and you will not be disappointed. Thank you very much for sharing your time, sir.
And a copy of Creating a Life That Matters, How to Live in Love with Meaning and Purpose. Fantastic. Good night, everybody. We'll see you next week. Is it sadness or just a show? Then go, go, go.